I'm Thea Card with a check of the KDLG local news. Same-sex marriages are legal again in Alaska. The U.S. Supreme Court denied the stay, which would have stopped the issuance of marriage licenses to same-sex couples until the Ninth Circuit Court heard the state's appeal early next year. Despite the ruling, the governor's office issued a statement saying they will continue to appeal the process because Governor Sean Parnell has sworn to uphold the state's constitution. In 1998, voters approved a constitutional amendment in Alaska to define marriage as between one man and one woman. Joshua Decker is the executive director of the Alaska ACLU. He says the governor's continued appeal is a waste of taxpayer money.
Governor Parnell took an oath to support the Alaska Constitution, but he also took an oath to support the United States Constitution. And we have now had all three levels of our federal courts weigh in on this issue.
Last week was the legal ping pong match. The Alaska District Court overturned the state's same-sex marriage ban on October 12th. Couples began applying for licenses last Monday, and three couples were allowed to wed immediately. As others sat out the mandatory three-day waiting period, the state was granted a temporary stay by the Ninth Circuit Court on Wednesday in order to give the Supreme Court a chance to make a decision. That stay was lifted Friday morning at 11 a.m. when the Supreme Court denied the request. Same-sex couples can receive marriage licenses when state courts and offices reopen today. Several prominent economists, business leaders, and former state government leaders gathered in Anchorage earlier this month to discuss Alaska's fiscal future. KDLG's Mike Mason listened in and filed this report.
The Forum on Alaska's Fiscal Future was sponsored by Alaska Common Ground and the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research. It was held October 4th at the Lusac Library in Anchorage. One of the key presenters was economist Gunnar Knapp. He's the director of ICER and is well known across the Bristol Bay region for his work studying the economics of the commercial fishing industry. He stressed that Alaska is facing a fiscal challenge because of falling oil production and growing demands and obligations for state spending.
Oil revenues account for about 90% of the state's unrestricted general fund revenues, which pay for most state government services, capital projects, and debt and retirement obligations. And our oil revenues will probably decline in the future. Why? Because oil production will probably decline, because the cost of oil production will probably increase, and because oil prices probably won't increase enough to offset lower production and higher costs.
Knapp says it's possible new investment could stop and even reverse the decline in oil production, but he says it's more likely that production will continue to decline over the long term. Knapp says Alaska's current oil tax structure further complicates the fiscal future of the state because of increasing costs to produce oil from the North Slope.
Production costs also affect our oil revenues because our oil production taxes are based on the producer's net profits after we deduct these costs. And the production costs have been rising. What's going to happen to costs in the future? We just don't know. It's uncertain. But they're probably going to keep rising.
During his presentation, Knapp showed those in attendance a graph showing the direct relationship between oil revenues to the state and oil prices. He says oil price is the most important component of the revenue equation, but it's impossible to accurately predict future oil prices.
Future oil prices are fundamentally uncertain. We just don't know how oil prices are going to change. And historically, we have not been very good at all about how successfully we could project what would happen in the future. You could see back in the 2004, 2005, 2006, we were pretty pessimistic. We thought, boy, these prices are higher than they've ever been. Surely the prices are going to fall back pretty soon, right? But then actually, we were wrong. We were too pessimistic, and the prices kept rising. Now, the prices have been very high, and we're projecting the prices are going to keep on rising. You don't want to read too much into thinking long term. What's happening today isn't necessarily very relevant, but today oil prices are not up at $110, they are down at $90. And what's driving that? If you look at that, that's driven by the fact that the world has a lot more oil than anybody expected just a few years ago. So who knows what's going to happen to oil prices in the future? We don't know. But I think we would be wise to recognize that they won't necessarily just keep on rising.
While Knapp says it's likely oil revenues will continue to decline, he outlined the data that indicates the demand for state services and spending will likely continue to increase. That's because of inflation, rising health care costs, and increasing population, and because Alaskans want things.
The fact is, a lot of Alaskans want more spending. We want better schools. We want a better university. We want better public safety. And we want new capital projects. We want roads, bridges, energy projects. We want a big new gas pipeline. There's a lot that we want. So we've got all these demands for growing spending at the same time we have less revenues. And it's these growing demands, all these things that account for the fact that, as Dan was talking about in the earlier thing, that we're spending more than twice as much as we were in 2005, even after cutbacks the last 2 years.
Knapp didn't mince words by asserting the decline in oil production and continued demands for state spending is why the state is looking deficit spending square in the eye. He noted the state can use its savings reserves to cover the deficits for a while, but it's not sustainable in the long term. Current projections show the state rolling through the $15 billion in savings within the next decade. Knapp says that scenario puts the state and its people in a difficult position with unpopular options like reducing spending, increasing taxes, or tapping the permanent fund. Another of the prominent economists in attendance for the forum on Alaska's fiscal future was Scott Goldsmith. He's the professor emeritus of economics at ICER. He admits that in all likelihood, oil revenues will continue to decline. However, he says there is some good news. Goldsmith says the state is in a much better fiscal situation than 12 years ago when many of the same concerns were raised and discussed.
Last time we were having these forums, about 2001, 2002, the state was in pretty dire fiscal circumstances. What's different today? Well, there are a couple important things that are different today. The first thing that's different today is that we have $12 to $15 billion of financial reserves on the table available to address any shortfalls in revenues in the short term. The second thing that we have today is the tremendous value of the oil still in the ground. Back in 2000, 2001, the market value of a barrel of oil was hovering around $20, $25. Today, it's between $80 and $100 a barrel. Well, that's a tremendous increase in the value of oil still in the ground that can potentially be produced in the future. And in addition, it makes economically productive or producible a lot more barrels of oil than was the case back in 2000, 2001. At $20 a barrel, there's a lot of oil up on the North Slope that's too expensive to produce. At $100 a barrel, a lot more is producible.
The Forum on Alaska's Fiscal Future was held October the 4th in Anchorage. It was sponsored by Alaska Common Ground and UAA's Institute of Social and Economic Research. Videos of the presentations are available on the website of Alaska Common Ground. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The Alaska Arts and Culture Foundation recently selected five individuals to receive the 2014 Alaska Literary Awards. The foundation works in partnership with the Alaska State Council on the Arts to pick five Alaska literary artists from nearly 100 applicants. $5,000 fellowships will go to Ernestine Hayes in Juno, Aaron Hallowell in Homer, Joan Kane in Anchorage, Susan Mishler in Anchorage, and Frank Seuss in Fairbanks. The Alaska Literary Awards recognize and supports writers of poetry, fiction, creative nonfiction, playwriting, and screenwriting. Friday marked the release of $7.5 million in federal disaster assistance for commercial fishermen affected by the 2012 failure of the Chinook salmon in the Yukon and Kuskokwim Rivers and Cook Inlet. Both U.S. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich welcomed the news and spoke in support of the decision. In 2012, low returns of Chinook salmon resulted in a fishery resource disaster that continued the pattern seen in 2010 and 2011 in the Yukon River and the 2011 failure in the Kuskokwim River. In September of 2012, U.S. Secretary of Commerce Rebecca Blank reviewed the information the state of Alaska provided and determined the commercial fisheries failed due to a resource disaster for the three regions. In 2013, Murkowski spoke on the U.S. Senate floor comparing the disaster in the Yukon-Kuskokwim to Hurricane Sandy, which hit the Northeast just months after the end of the 2012 salmon season in Alaska. She said the passing of a bill to assist the area hit by the storm was important and that it helped those affected in Alaska was just as important.
In my state, when you have a fisheries that has declined to the extent that we have seen, the loss of the Chinook salmon on the Yukon River, on the Kuskokwim River, the Upper Cook Inlet, this had a dramatic impact on our state's economy, a dramatic impact on the livelihoods of so many Alaskans, whether they be commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, our subsistence-based fisheries, our fisheries communities, those businesses that are dependent on our salmon fisheries. These were all impacted this past year.
The first grant application was approved in August. The Pacific State Marine Fisheries Commission, which worked with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration on other disaster programs, mailed out applications to permit holders in the affected areas. Begich, a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, tried to acquire over $20 million in assistance for Alaskans hurt by the run failure. But as of now, a review is underway on the spending plans for the remaining $13 million available under the federal appropriation. He says the assistance money is a long time coming, but should help compensate fishermen for their past financial losses suffered to ensure the long-term survival of the king salmon. The Alaska assistance is part of the $75 million appropriated for the fishery disasters nationwide. Alaska's unemployment rate remained steady in September at 6.8%, according to the latest data released on Friday. KDLG's Mike Mason has the details.
The seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for Alaska in September was 6.8%. That's unchanged from the rate recorded back in August. Alaska's rate is well above the national rate, which stood at 5.9% in August. Alaska's non-seasonally adjusted unemployment rate was 5.9% last month. That's down from the 6.2% recorded back in August. The Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development notes that the lowest unemployment rate of the year typically falls in September. That's because schools are back in session, but at the same time, there's still some economic activity associated with Alaska's busy summer. The department notes that unemployment rates fell last month in 17 of the 29 boroughs and census areas in Alaska. The southwest region of Alaska continues to be the only region with double-digit unemployment. The rate was 12.1% last month. That's down slightly from the 12.3% rate recorded in August. The Dillingham census area posted an unemployment rate of 9.4% in September. That's up from the 8.5% rate recorded back in August. The Bristol Bay Borough's unemployment rate stands at 2.7%. That's up from the 2% recorded in August. The Lake and Peninsula Borough posted a rate of 6.1%, which is down from the 7.4% rate recorded back in August. The September unemployment rate in the Aleutians East Borough was 7.6%, and it was 5.8% in the Aleutians West census area. The unemployment rate in the Bethel census area was recorded at 15.6%. That's down slightly from the 15.9% rate recorded back in August. The highest unemployment rate in the state last month was the 20.5% recorded in the Wade-Hampton census area. That may be high, but it's down from the 22.7% rate recorded in August. A look around the state shows that the Anchorage-Matsu region had an unemployment rate of 5.2% in September, while the rate in the Gulf Coast region was 6.2%. The Interior region posted a rate of 5.7%, and the rate in the Northern region was 9.1%. The rate in Southeast was 5.2%. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The Alaska Unity ticket of Bill Walker and Byron Mallott picked up some big endorsements last week. On Wednesday, the Bering Straits Native Corporation threw its support behind the Walker-Mallott campaign. Bill Walker is the independent candidate for governor who's challenging incumbent governor Sean Parnell. The corporation is also supporting Senator Mark Begich for re-election. They also threw their support behind Congressman Don Young. The Forest Service plans three more timber sales in a part of Prince of Wales Island conservationists say need to be protected. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfield has more.
The sales are between Thorn Bay and Kaufman Cove on northeast Prince of Wales Island. They're part of the larger Big Thorn sale area, which is tied up with court challenges. Officials recently sold nearly 100 million board feet of bighorn timber to Viking Lumber, Southeast's largest mill. Tongass supervisor Forrest Cole says the three smaller sales total less than 5% of that amount.
There's a fairly significant number of small operators on Prince of Wales, and these projects have been set up specifically for them.
The smaller mills, some part-time businesses, have lobbied the Forest Service for sales they can afford to bid on. Cole says the goal is to keep them operating.
They are larger than typical sales that they deal with, but the concept for these projects is similar to the bighorn, to try to get a longer-term amount of wood available to the smaller operators.
Several conservation groups have sued to block sales in the bighorn area. One is Greenpeace, where Sitka's Larry Edwards is Alaska Forest campaigner.
We think that the whole bighorn sale needs to be set aside and the legal matter decided before any sales are made at all.
Others involved include the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, the Alaska Wilderness League, the Greater Southeast Alaska Conservation Community, and the Center for Biological Diversity. They say bighorn sales will hurt deer and wolf populations. Governor Sean Parnell's administration has filed to become involved in the legal battle. The state fears the Forest Service will not adequately defend its decisions. While the sales are designed for smaller mills, Cole says there's no guarantee they'll get the trees.
Everybody can put a bid in on it. These are being put out as timber sale contracts, so highest bidder wins. Given that the larger operator just picked up about 100 million feet, we suspect that there would probably be less interest there and more interest by the smaller operators.
The Forest Service estimates the three small sales value at about $750,000. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The Financial Industry Regulatory Authority Foundation released a study that shows how vulnerable finances are for American renters. The study also placed Alaska in the top five of renters' states in the nation. The study compared the finances of those who rent and those who own their own homes. 50% of renters are financially fragile, however, only 21% of homeowners have shaky finances. FINRA Investor Education Foundation Research Director Gary Modola co-authored the study and says he looked at the financial capability and literacy of renters in America.
The research paper actually examines renter behavior relative to homeowner behavior at the national level. At the national level, what we find is that renters are financially fragile. They exhibit low levels of financial literacy, and they lack emergency savings. Now, in addition, they're also more prone to experiencing income shocks. And essentially, this is a dangerous combination because it can really inhibit their ability to respond to financial emergencies.
On the national scale, 24% of renters said it was very difficult to cover their monthly bills. That's double the percent of homeowners that said the same thing. 50% of homeowners have some kind of emergency fund, whereas only 22% of renters reported having enough money saved to cover their expenses for 3 months in the event of sickness, job loss, or another emergency. However, as far as renters go, Modula says Alaska renters are doing very well.
In our survey, we ask respondents how difficult it is to make ends meet. You know, when you look at renters nationally, almost a quarter say that it's very difficult to make ends meet. When you look at renters in Alaska, It's only about 16% say it's very difficult to make ends meet. That's a pretty significant drop.
He says there are several possible reasons for the increase in renter security in Alaska.
Some of it could be demographic reasons. This study didn't look at the ability to make ends meet based on demographics. So it is possible that demographically renters in Alaska are doing a little bit better than renters nationally. And that is true. The profile is pretty much the same. In other words, when you compare Alaskan renters to Alaskan homeowners, you see that they're doing worse financially. But again, demographically, when you compare Alaskan renters to national renters, they're slightly higher income and slightly higher financial literacy.
Modala says Alaska as a whole has one of the highest financial literacy rates in the country. That means Alaskans are among some of the smartest with the handling of their money and how to save and invest properly. Many of the stories you hear during the KDLG local news can be found online at www.kdlg.org. You can also find contact information on the website if you'd like to provide a comment, correction, or news tip. That's a check of the KDLG local news. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card reporting.